set the table, make sure we brought snacks and everything for our guest.
Oh, yes.
Are we a shoes on or shoes off podcast? Like, should they take their shoes off before they enter the for guests?
I think coat on the coat rack.
Right, of course.
But if it's hardwood floor, shoes can stay on.
Caroline,
we can mock that, you know?
What do you think our podcast is if not hardwood floors?
Fabulous.
Hello and welcome to Let's Learn Everything, the show where we learn anything and everything interesting. Today, we're going to be getting a question from a special guest, and then we're going to be asking that guest a few questions of our own. My name's Tom, and today our special guest is a paleontologist at the Idaho Virtualization Laboratory and a science communicator on TikTok. Ella is unfortunately sick today, but she made sure to pass along her question for today's guest, which is... what makes a dinosaur a dinosaur?
Oh, yeah, this is a fun question.
My name is Caroline, and I'm going to be asking today's guest about dinosaur poops and why they're interesting.
And then my name is Evelyn Vollmer, and I'm going to be asking, how old is the Earth?
I feel like I should know the answer.
I feel exactly the same.
I don't know the answer. Oh, okay. I'm so excited for this. Good stuff.
Awesome. I'm excited to talk about it.
Evelyn, thank you so much for hopping on the show.
Yeah.
Eagle, your listeners might recognize your name because I asked you a few questions in researching episode 2 of our podcast, which is which animal has the most bones. I wanted to get a sense of the answer from a paleontologist, and you guessed right away. You knew immediately. You were like, it's probably like a snake, right? And I was like, yeah, it is. And then, yeah, I just wanted to know, I remember asking, like, why, let me see if I can pull it up. I remember asking why there wasn't a list of all the bones, and I believe you were just like, that doesn't seem super important for the kind of work we do. I was like, that's fair.
Oh my gosh, I forgot that we had that conversation.
This is Evelyn's message. I think it's hard to measure, plus a bit unimportant, which is fair. But no, this is actually interesting. You say bones that change through evolution are much more interesting to study, like land to fish transitions or whales and their useless pelvises. So, I mean, to your point, it's more interesting to consider how the bones change than just like quantifying how many there are right now.
Yeah.
Which I think makes perfect sense.
That makes so much sense. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I stick with what I said.
I stand by my answer, Tom. Can I ask, just to start off before we hop into this question, I am so endlessly curious by paleontology and sort of just like what you do. I want to ask first just like how you got into it and then also what you're currently studying right now, if you can say.
Yeah, okay. So my story is kind of strange. When I was a kid, I never had the like big dinosaur obsession or anything. I just didn't like care much about dinosaurs. I think it was because I didn't have a whole lot of context for them, and I was raised in a very conservative house. So we believed like the Earth was 6,000 years old and crazy stuff like that. So
which, by the way, that's not going to be the answer to this upcoming question.
Oh. Plot twist. Anyway, yeah. So I started to like deconstruct a lot of things when I got to high school, and especially when I was like in my early years of college. And I took like my first geology class, and we talked about a lot of this stuff. And I learned about like what I'm actually going to be talking about today was like the first lecture that I was like, oh damn, like paleontology is really cool.
Wow.
And so I always really loved history. Like that was something that I loved all throughout high school. And so when I got to college, I asked the local museum if I could intern with them. And they were like, yeah, absolutely. We love free labor. And so I was like, it was the transition between high school and college. So I worked there that summer and I must have made like a really good impression, because then they were like, oh yeah, we can like hire you as a paid intern through college. Okay. So that was awesome. I was an educator at the museum for a while. So as I was learning things, I was getting to teach other people these super fun paleontology facts throughout the museum. And then there was an opportunity that opened up in the Idaho Virtualization Laboratory, which is where I work currently. And they're connected with the Idaho Museum of Natural History and the Idaho Virtualization Laboratory. So they knew me from working as an education intern, and they were like, hey, do you want to come over here and work with us? And so the Virtualization Laboratory, we do 3D scanning of fossils and museum fabrication, and we work with researchers and other institutions to put their collections online. So that's what I've been doing. And then when I graduated college, they were like, we need you. So then they offered me a full-time job. So that is where I am now. And it's been amazing. But yeah, like the first thing to come back, circle around back to your question. Really, what got me into it was working at the museum.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
I always loved rocks. Like rocks were super cool. So then like actually learning the context behind them, I was like, oh wow, this is awesome.
I could get into this.
That's amazing. Is there anything that you're working on presently?
Yeah. So in September, I'm going to be leaving to Boston. We're going to be scanning Harvard's collections. So that's going to be a two-month-long trip, and I'm super excited about that. That's an NSF-funded project, so it's pretty exciting.
Amazing.
The whole goal is 50 of the world's largest mammals. So the first leg of that project, we went to Cal Academy and a bunch of other schools in California, and we scanned their collections. So we did a blue whale. This was pre-COVID, which is pretty awesome. Yeah, I can send you the link for that later. You can check it out.
To the blue whale?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Amazing.
We can put it in the show notes.
Can I ask? How are you scanning? What device do you use to operate to do
how
this?
How do you do it?
We have these laser scanners that they've got like this really interesting looking laser gun on their handle.
Yeah.
And then they like... I have to send you a picture of what they look like. But basically, they shoot like a laser on top of your fossil. It's awesome because it's non-damaging. And that laser will create a point cloud in your computer. And ours is like a really, really high resolution scanner. So you can get up to 35 micron. It's exciting.
Wow! Sorry, I'm just... My inner child, the thought of shooting lasers at fossils is literally the coolest thing in the world.
It's so funny. I like never saw that this would be the position that I took in life, but I'm glad that I get to do it.
Now you're here.
Here I am. So today's question is, how old is the Earth? And I want to hear from you guys. No Googling or...
No!
A fair bit. So
I'm 27 and I remember when I was born the Earth was there, so we got at least oh boy, it's really, I feel like we've been talking about time scales a lot on this show, and so I'm really excited to learn this, because you know, when it comes to like human artifacts and stuff like that, the farthest back we go is like 5,000 years. And I'm assuming Earth I know Earth is a lot. It's more than what I'm trying to get at is if it's millions, billions, or trillions is what I'm trying to guesstimate. Caroline, I don't know if you have a guess.
I would go.
Or you remember.
In the bit. Well, so okay. The first question is, when we talk about like the Earth, are we talking about it as like a complete structure?
Or that's a great question.
Earlier points in its coming
togetherness. Yeah, when does the start happen?
We had this conversation a couple of weeks ago about what the definition of a planet is, and it's just like when does it become
I feel like, you know, as much as we are like litigating the number, I feel like, Caroline, to be fair, I've definitely seen this number, you know, like I can't lie and be like I've never run across this number. I've definitely seen
100%.
It before in multiple times in various science videos. My For some reason, I have this number in my brain, and I'm just going to say it. I'm going to say 45 billion years. That's the number I see. I can't remember if that could be something else. That's my guess. Gosh.
I might go older.
All right.
I'm looking at Evelyn's face like, is there anything that can be revealed?
I'm just trying
from
to get
here?
Some hints.
Yeah. No thoughts.
Head empty, poker face. I have the number 67 in my head. And therefore.
Cool. That's a good number.
It's a great one, isn't it? I'm going to go 67 billion years old. And I can't wait to be dramatically incorrect. So let's dive into this.
All right. So let's just jump into this. Okay. So the way that humans calculated the age of the Earth is really interesting. And it's fun to watch how humans, basically we created the scientific method and the way that of thinking really ended up changing. So Aristotle believed that Earth was infinitely old. So he didn't think that it had a beginning or an end.
Whoa.
And you have to think about how, like, Aristotle had no idea about fossils.
Mm-hmm.
And geology, as we know it, really started picking up in, like, the 50s.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Whoa.
Yeah, kind of mind-blowing. Leonardo da Vinci actually started looking at some sea fossils, like shells and stuff. And he basically was kind of like, the flood that's talked about in the Bible makes no freaking sense. He was like, this is whack. And that was in 1510 that he was thinking about this. And then it's fun because then we get to Archbishop James Usher, who in 1654, he used, it, again, the scientific method. He decides to use the Bible as his tool for how he's trying to figure this out. So he looks at the Bible and then he creates this family tree. And that is where we get the 6,000 years old thing. He calculated that
number,
it was 6,000 years old.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
That's
okay.
Interesting. I do like that I've heard that number tossed around. I do like that it does come from some scientific reasoning where it's like,
hilarious.
They tried really hard, didn't they, with what they had?
With the sources were provided.
he was doing his best.
We did some math. Can I say, Evelyn, it is really nuts to me that, like, now I'm picturing in my mind, like, a graph of, like, how old we thought the Earth was over time. And it's wild that for the longest time, it's infinity. Like,
yeah,
It
went from infinity to 6,000. Which feel like really opposite ends of the correct spectrum.
And I think Archbishop James Usher, he thought that it wasn't infinitely old because in the Bible, there's a beginning and an end. So, like, it was, he was thinking of, like, what the Bible had taught him and all this.
It's also really interesting because, I think we all think of the Earth as, like, a rock, but it is, and, you know, because now we've grown up in times where people have gone to other celestial bodies and stuff like that, but, like, it is just, like, everything at a certain point. And so it does make sense for some people to think that it is infinitely old back then, but it's just interesting to go back into that mindset after what we know now.
And it's interesting, I think in like Aristotle's case, it's interesting too because he's known as this great philosopher. And so all of these ideas, he's just like, well, it's just infinitely old.
because he
picked an idea and was like, you know what, we'll go with that one. That seems right.
Yeah, but I really do love that Leonardo da Vinci was like, in his time, looking at fossils and thinking this doesn't make any freaking sense. Like he really was just like, that's weird. After Usher, we get to Nicholas Steno, who's like a badass in geology.
Ooh.
This is the 1660s at this point. He was the first guy to come up with the rule of superposition, which means that fossils that are in lower, deeper areas are going to be older than those that are deposited higher up. So he started to suggest that we could start dating things based off of where they're at in the layers of the rock. I think he was the first person to be like, yeah, it's pretty old and we can say so because of fossils for reals. And then we have another dude. I don't know how to say his name to save my life, but in 1779, he experimented with heating up rocks and timing how long it would take for them to cool down because he was trying to compare them with the Earth. This guy had no idea that we have a mantle that is still superheated.
So, of course,
you know what? Again, another great point. Because in my mind, Why would you think that? That's a great point.
Right, but it's interesting to see that the scientific method is starting to become a thing. Like, they're starting to create these experiments. And so,
melting rocks? That's science.
That's science.
Science, right
there. Science. Uh-huh. So he actually said that the Earth was 75,000 years old, which was getting a lot older than what the other estimates had been.
Yeah.
Then we get to James Hedden, who took the Aristotle approach. This is in 1788. So he also was like, yeah, Earth is just infinitely old. You guys are crazy.
Oh, we went straight back.
So we
in
went
the
back.
Opposite direction.
We went back again.
Right. This chart has gone way back up. Never mind.
The theme of humans never learning really does just repeat itself
in
every
hilarious.
Aspect of history, doesn't it?
And this one has been very, like, people have been fighting about this for a while. Like, there's the one group of people who are like, it's got to be really old. But then there's the other that are like, you have no idea what we're talking about. And it's just lots of arguing back and forth. So then we get to William Thomson, who you guys might know as Lord Kelvin, our boy.
Oh.
This is in 18...
Hold on, I'm sorry. Was that his nickname?
Lord Kelvin, yeah. He's the guy who, like, came up with... Or his name is Kelvin.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But his name is William Thompson?
William Thompson, yeah. He was that before he was Lord Kelvin.
Right. Okay.
He's a fancy
guy. Okay, we could just do that, I guess.
This is what I have the most questions about so far.
Lord Tom Lumperson.
I gotta change it. I gotta be a Lord something.
Fantastic. Fabulous.
Huh.
Yeah. So he was actually pretty crazy. He used math to try to figure this one out. He didn't know about the rock cycle. He was doing his best. Oh. He went for a 20 to 40 million approach. That was how old he thought it was. So he's the first person to be like, it's probably in the millions, not thousands.
I gotta say, it is very funny that Caroline and I are so judgmental, having made a guess at the beginning. And I think as we get closer, we're getting less judgmental. We're like, 20 to 40 million, that's way too young. Totally. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Sure.
I should have written down what your guys' guesses were. Now I don't remember. You guys have to be honest.
Mine was
45 billion. Caroline's was 60-something, right?
67
billion.
Yeah. Okay. I should change it to 69 just for the shits and giggles. So we'll stick with 67.
Yes. Okay, so the last one was 1862. That was our guy. And then at that same time, Charles Darwin and Charles Lyell were like, that's still way too young. But they were fighting about it amongst themselves.
Of course.
Can I also say, Evelyn, this is what an amazing, Avengers of scientific minds answering this question. Like, we can't gloss over. We've gone from Aristotle to Lord Kelvin to Charles Darwin. This is...
This is a crazy one that people have wanted to know for a very long time, and it kind of makes sense.
It's a great point.
This is like their going to the moon thing.
It
was a big freaking deal. So, Charles Darwin wrote in Origin of the Species, his guess was 300 million for how old the Earth was.
Okay,
and it was so controversial at the time that in Origin of the Species, because people were pissed about this. You're like, you're crazy, man. And so it actually, in the older copies of Origin of the Species, you can find this date.
No.
But in later copies of it, it was removed.
No.
Because he was like,
no way.
Oh, I don't know about that. Yeah. Wild.
That's like the equivalent of somebody deleting a really
scandalous
TikTok. They just took the line out of it.
Gone. Dunzo.
We took a screenshot of your tweet, Darwin. You can't hide it from anyone.
Canceled.
That's amazing.
You're canceled, Darwin. I love it. So the next one, we're going to Arthur Holmes. So this is 1946. By this point, they're kind of talking about the rock cycle and all this.
We're getting so close to recent.
We're getting really close.
Really...
This is less than 100 years
ago. Holy moly.
This is insane.
Well, think about, plate tectonics are really young in the, scientific mind. We didn't realize that continents were moving for a really long time.
Ah.
I guess so. I didn't know this.
There's so much that we don't know. It's hilarious.
Not just so much we don't know. So much we don't know about, literally the place we live. Literally the thing.
Yeah. It's wild. So the rock cycle makes life really difficult when you're trying to do radiometric dating. And then
the rocks, and for those who don't know, the rock cycle is when rocks evaporate and then form into clouds in the sky and then rain down as rock rain and then go into the rock oceans. And
beautiful.
Then,
oh, Tom, it's almost as if you rehearsed that joke beforehand.
Hey, I only had it like a few minutes ago and have been thinking about it.
No, Tom, the rock cycle is... The cycle of rocks going from igneous to metamorphic to sedimentary. So that's them going through Earth's mantle, then getting broken up into little things that are great for sedimentary rock, which, you know, fossils, and I love sedimentary. anyway. So Arthur Holmes in 1946 was studying this, but he was like super, super criminally underfunded. But he did the best with what he could, and so he was studying all of these rocks and samples that he could get his hands on, but again, like, criminally underfunded. And I think it's pretty awesome that he came up with this number, because he was the first one to say 3 billion years old.
And obviously that's
still too young.
But his peers at the time were like, you're crazy. They did not believe him. It was a very, like, controversial thing. Again, in 1946, that was a controversial take.
That's crazy.
Okay. All right. So the last guy. Are you guys ready for this?
So excited. How recent was this?
This is 1956.
My God. We are for reference, 5 years away from landing on the moon.
Wow. I didn't think about that. That is also crazy.
No. Oh, Tom, why did you say that? That's gross.
Humans are kind of...
I will say, to be fair, we're getting closer with these, right? Like, the number is within orders of magnitude.
The 6,000 number is starting to become controversial.
Yeah.
So we get to Claire Cameron Patterson, who is a geochemist that lived in 1956. And he wrote this really awesome paper called Age of Meteorites and the Earth.
Great title. We love a great title.
Beautiful. Chef's kiss.
Chef's kiss.
He was studying lead isotopic data from the Diablo Canyon meteorites, and he calculated that the age of the Earth is 4.6 billion years old.
Interesting.
And that's... Wait, did I... When I said...
You had it, but you forgot the decimal.
I had the wrong decimal. No!
we went way older then.
You asked what the age of 10 Earths would be, right? That's what you said. just one? I meant 4.6 billion.
That makes so much sense.
Tomato, tomato.
It's nice that we got it in the billions.
Yes.
Yeah.
So 4.6 billion years. So, and I'm sorry, so he used a meteorite to...
Yeah, so he was studying lead isotopes in meteorites. So basically what they were trying to do was find the oldest pieces of rock on the Earth that they could to try to come up with this number, and that the one that he kept finding in these meteorites was 4.6 billion years old. I'm really glad that you guys did the episode talking about radiometric dating and all that stuff. I don't have to get into.
Because you're more curious about radiocarbon dating, check out episode 17 of the podcast. We don't have to do a primer. It's great.
Yes, exactly.
Hey folks, Tom here with a quick editor's note. We got a bit carried away with this discussion, so we forgot to fully explain why meteorites are being used to measure the age of the Earth. Basically, the idea is that meteorites close to the Earth were formed around the same time that the Earth was. But because these chunks of rock have been in space this whole time, they haven't gone through the rock cycle. They haven't been melted or reformed. And so they're basically like time capsules of rock that have remained unchanged since the Earth formed. And so, kind of like carbon dating, we can uranium date these meteorites to 4.6 billion years. And lots of meteorite samples and samples of other old rocks, including samples from the moon, all support this number, which is wild. Anyway, back to the episode.
I also wanted to... This is kind of off the beaten path a little, but about Patterson... He, in 1965, was one of the first people to bring attention to how terrible lead was and how it was really messing up our atmosphere and all of this. So he purposely stopped working with any of these companies that were continuously messing up the environment and all this stuff. And actually, damn, he was excluded from a panel of the National Research Council on atmospheric lead contamination, even though at the time he was the lead expert on lead. So it's like, wow. What? He's kind of an awesome guy. I give him props for that.
Love that. Yeah. So, that rocks.
Wow.
Proud of him.
He's literally the smartest person on this subject. And they were,
yeah,
like,
and they were
no.
like,
lol, no, we don't want him.
He liked making money, but so get out of here.
Get out of here.
It may, yeah, really shows where their priorities are if you have to do that.
Yeah.
Boy, howdy.
Yeah, he was that very rules. Critical of all that. But anyway, yeah, so we have gotten to the answer. The Earth is 4.6 billion years old.
Wow, okay.
That's until so... in a few million years, someone watches this podcast and they're like, you're an idiot. Well,
so are we pretty satisfied with that answer?
Yeah,
or are
I mean,
people...
since 1956, it has largely remained unchanged and it's pretty accepted, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, for it to remain unchanged with so much technological change,
yeah,
it seems like a pretty, it seems
pretty,
I don't know of any
one.
Number that has stayed so solid through that many years of science. Yeah,
yeah, uh-huh, at least in recent history, that's for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, to be fair, it is 4.6 plus or minus 50 million.
Oh,
you know that's that is also a good point,
but when you're talking about millions.
No, I mean, that is a great point, though. I literally...
I was like, shit, I should say that.
No, it's a great point, because the margin of error is like millions and millions of years. And so that is true. I mean, the number could probably get more accurate in that sense, but it's unlikely to change in the billions digit.
Yeah.
Is
yeah.
correct.
Mm-hmm.
That is interesting, though.
Well, at that point, it's then like... How specific can you be bothered to get at that point?
I was gonna say, I feel like there are probably, you know, from a pub trivia answer, I feel like 4.6 is satisfactory, but I'm sure, could there be scientific areas where that specific number could be relevant to? I'm sure probably with astrophysics, I'm sure there is some interest in terms of getting a more specific number, but...
Mm-hmm.
In paleontology... millions of years is nothing. It's like, it's a couple of days.
That's fine. It is what it is.
It's all right. Yeah, whatever.
Just a billion years.
Yeah, just look at it. It's fine. Beginning of the universe, like Big Bang. I wonder.
Ooh. I'm going to Google it.
Is it 13 trillion?
Ooh. Okay. Should we have guesses? How old do you guys think the universe is?
Yeah, I would say trillions, probably.
You sure? Like 10 about trillion? That one?
Wait, really? What is it?
According to Google, around
6,000?
No, Tom. According to Google, it's 13 billion.
13 billion.
Old. Yeah.
That's
still
not that much.
Really. Are you. Tom, 13 billion years old. That's still quite old.
I was just editing the episode on how many digits of pi we've calculated, so my head's in like the trillions. I have to level set with like even a million years is more than any human can physically comprehend, so like
literally yeah.
I think
it's so weird to think like how short a period of time humans have existed on this planet. It's like 1% of this planet's entire existence has been dominated by humans. And we've done so much in our short time. Really proud of us for that one. Yay.
Did a lot of stuff with lead, apparently, that we shouldn't have.
I don't know. It's so interesting when you start talking about that, because it really puts in, I don't know, this is like a really philosophical kind of thing. But it's interesting because it puts into perspective humanity and what we are doing here and how quickly things have progressed. I mean, even since the 50s, technology-wise, we have just skyrocketed much.
Yeah,
and I think it's like, humans have been around for 300,000 years as like from our very, 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 very early ancestors. So just crazy. Like the dinosaurs ruled for millions of years.
Yeah.
So it's fun when you start talking about these big numbers, and a lot of the time people, they just kind of like gloss over and they're like, thousands is a lot of years. But then you go to dinosaurs did their whole thing for millions of years. And the Earth has been around for billions.
I'm having a small existential crisis over here. Don't mind me.
But that said, I'm starting to get these benchmarks. Like, it's like the millions is dinosaurs, the hundreds of thousands is humans, the billions is the Earth. Mm-hmm. What was I gonna say? It was a funny joke. There it goes. Can't remember
Hilarious,
it. Let's just
Tom.
Pretend I said one.
If you can think of it,
I'll edit it in post, and then we can.
If me and Evelyn do like a little laugh. And then you can just put the joke in.
Drag it in?
Yeah.
Oh, amazing. Thanks. Thank you.
Write it out on paper. Ha, ha, ha.
Ha, 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 ha. That was such a funny joke, Tom. Thank you for sharing.
We have one of those, like, laughter signs, like, at a sitcom. That's it. It's just wild.
Yeah. I think this has blown both mine and Tom's little brains slightly.
Oh, I remember now. It wasn't a funny thing. It was a philosophical thing. Ah. I was going to say, the other thing about that's funny about 4.6 billion years is that's the amount of time it took for a species to know how old the Earth is, which is another thing to think
about.
What did you say?
Yes!
To consider.
Oh. Oh, I don't like that, Tom.
Which is just another thing about the progression of humanity on the planet. It's pretty wild.
I don't know. I switch between I hate humans so freaking much, but I also think humans are pretty badass.
That's really cool, isn't it?
Soul of the podcast. We from like the main topic to the misc topic can go from humans are horrible to humans are actually amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
that's a very common thread on here.
Yeah. The fact that it could have been, people thought it was infinity at one point, that has boggled my little brain a little.
That thought literally never crossed my mind that someone would think.
Yeah.
But I guess it makes perfect sense. I mean, like, why else would, I don't know.
Yeah, and like, we're so lucky to live in an age where a researcher in Russia can be looking at something, and then someone else in South America can be looking at something, and someone over here can be looking at something. And we have that whole conglomerate of knowledge versus like Aristotle is just like chilling in Greece, and he was a
I don't know, infinity.
Give me some wine, I don't know, like
meanwhile you are micron scanning fossils.
I don't know, I would just love to hear what people from back that far would think about some of the things that we have learned about.
Oh man, I think it'd go a little something like this.
Witchcraft!
Yep, actually, yeah.
Probably, yeah.
So the question that Ella was dying to ask, maybe literally, judging by how sick she seemed when we called her. Her question was, what is the definition of a dinosaur? What makes a dinosaur a dinosaur? And I think it's only fair that we try our best. I'm going to say, Carol, I don't know if you want to guess first. I was going to say probably 4.6 billion.
oh, dear, Tom. Oh,
I mean, we know. I can see it. I can see it in my brain. It's what's in the museum.
It's
a dinosaur.
Yeah.
Like, Caroline, do you think is it a time-based definition, or is it a biological definition is going to be my question. Like, could there be a dinosaur today?
Ooh, I know that, like, because immediately my brain was like, big old lizard things, cold-blooded, but I know that most dinosaurs were like that weird middle ground, Tom, of like warm-blooded and cold-blooded. So I don't even think that like really basic things like that can work in a definition of what a dinosaur is. So Evelyn, I would love to hear what you think the definition of a dinosaur is.
It's really interesting to hear what you guys have to say, because what is a dinosaur is a complicated ass question. You think like that's a pretty standard question. I would counter and say it's easier to say what is not a dinosaur.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Interesting.
And it all kind of comes down to old men in the 1850s were trying to come up with a definition for an animal, right? And cladistics is confusing as hell because it's like, ah, well, this animal has this trait, so it gets to branch off somewhere else, and blah, blah, blah.
Mm.
And these things have to do with, you know, other stuff that regular people don't care much about.
Yeah.
So one definition is that dinosaurs have an upright stance in their legs. So.
Oh.
Interesting. Okay.
Wait. So would that exclude, like, I'm so delighted Evelyn has brought out a visual guide, which is a T-Rex.
It's a feathered Rex. He's a silly guy.
Wow.
Yeah. So they've got this upright stance with their legs versus, like, reptiles, where they have, like, you know, sprawling stance. Their arms are kind of...
Evelyn's doing an amazing demonstration.
Coming out.
Wait, so does that exclude, like, Triceratops from dinosaur?
No, Triceratops is a dinosaur. Gosh, do I have a Triceratops? I have a Styracosaurus, which is close enough. He has an upright stance.
Oh, okay, I'm seeing it now. It's the sort of, like,
Like, they're able to elevate their body up away from the ground rather than, like, their stomachs dragging against the bottom or something.
Like, yeah, like a distinctive lower leg section that it looks more like a chicken thigh than a lizard leg.
Dinosaurs, one of the other characteristics was that dinosaurs are typically not swimming in the ocean or doing any kind of aquatic lifestyle.
Right.
But Spinosaurus messed with that. So Spinosaurus is a dinosaur. But he actually probably spent most of his life in the water. So that was, you know, that's an artifact of white men in the 1850s were trying to come up with a definition.
Right.
And they didn't know. So.
Come up with a definition for things millions of years ago.
Yeah.
We can barely do that today.
It's
let
difficult.
Alone with things that we're uncovering.
Yeah. So there is this funny thing in dinosaur cladistics. Is that there are saurischian dinosaurs and then ornithischian dinosaurs.
Oh, I love a good word like that.
So birds are dinosaurs, and they were really close with this naming scheme because ornithischia, ornith being, you know, having to do with birds.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They messed up because the ornithischian dinosaurs it's the bird-hipped dinosaurs. But that line is the line that is not close to birds, which just... makes me sad.
That's annoying.
So they named it guessing wrong.
Yes. So it's fun.
Is that to this day it still
stands? That's
try explaining this to a little 4-year-old. And they're like, why did they mess it up?
Wow.
It's because we were coming up with these names before we really knew a whole lot about dinosaurs. And any kind of name that is the first one is the one that's going to stick.
Wow. That is so funny.
Yeah.
That's so annoying. Oh, maybe future scientists will go through and change, like, all of the dinosaur naming. That's what I want now from us.
A rebrand, yeah.
Yeah, rebrand.
Gen Z, come on. Do your thing.
Oh my God, I love that. But yeah, so scientific naming is confusing as fuck. There's a lot of deep-rooted things in there that are just...
And there's also a lot of human things to it, which I think is important to remember. Because, you know, when you, like, the first time you hear, like, the scientific name for an animal, you're like, oh, that's like it. And then you learn, like, actually, you know, the scientific word is wrong because we thought it was this. And then, so...
That is exactly what's happening here.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's fun because you can also, like, you'll walk through a museum and a parent will be trying to teach their kid about something and they see a mammoth and they go, look at the dinosaurs. Mammoths are not dinosaurs.
Yeah.
But it's hard to go unpack all of that in 2 seconds. But that's because they lived in the Ice Age. So dinosaurs had, like, way died out by that point. So that is why they're not. Most dinosaurs, anyway, I should say, with the asteroid and all of that.
With
so
that thing.
Saurischia, Tyrannosaurus rex, they branch off and they create birds. So that we have modern dinosaurs. So looping back to, is this a time-based question?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Not necessarily, because we do have birds, and they are basically dinosaurs. And by basically, I mean they are dinosaurs.
Oh, I like this.
Taking a second. taking a second. Yeah, so what you do is you take that parent and you go outside and you go, those pigeons, those are dinosaurs.
Look at them. But then, then they're like, oh my God, a crocodile. It's a dinosaur. You're like, no, my friend. But no.
Wow, great point.
Because they branched off way early on.
Oh.
So the age of reptiles has a lot. This is talking about the Mesozoic. We've got ichthyosaurs, plesiosaurs, mosasaurs. Mm-hmm. They lived at the same time as dinosaurs, but they're marine reptiles. So they're not dinosaurs.
Oh, I dislike that distinction very much.
Do be like that.
It do be like that, yeah. Tom's still processing.
So pterosaurs, are they also, they are dinosaurs?
Nope.
No?
They're flying reptiles.
Oh, come, no. Mm-mm, no, no. I'm even more upset now.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, child, explaining this to child me would have been very distressing, I think. So I understand why it's so hard.
Now, okay, can I ask, Ellen, is there a better bucket word for those kinds of animals that does include, could you say like Jurassic reptiles, or like what would be like a good, if you had to come up with a word that included pterosaurs and dinosaurs, what would there be a word that could satisfy? Like I'm trying to say, like, if next time a kid gets a bucket of dinosaurs, what should be the phrase on top that actually encompasses
everything?
Okay. Oh man, I would go with Mesozoic creatures, life, or something like that. But then you're excluding things like, if there's like a Dimetrodon toy in the stash, that's a Permian critter.
And of course there is, because I know what that is.
They're great. They're my favorite. But anyway, they lived before dinosaurs, so they're also often confused with them, because they're like these really interesting synapsids.
I've not even processed the existence of things before dinosaurs.
Which is the cooler gang for paleontology.
Because they were before dinosaurs.
Yeah.
You literally told us the definition with like those stronger hind legs, the very distinctive hind legs that can stand. And I sat there and I nodded and I went, mm-hmm, but in my soul, I didn't. I'm still like, but they're still dinosaurs,
when you,
right?
When you messaged me that was going to be one of the questions, I was like, are you sure? Are you sure?
We want to go down this rabbit hole.
Are you
sure
you want some? Yeah, and our next question is, why isn't Santa real? Well, this does kind of lead into our next question, and I want to do a two-part with this, which is, I remember you've done some TikToks that I think are hilarious, which are like, if this is your favorite dinosaur, this is what I think
what you are,
you look like. And you basically say like which dinosaurs are basic and which are cool. And so I wanted to know, firstly, what your favorite dinosaur is, and also with that, what is a cool dinosaur to like?
How can we be the real cool kids in the class, basically?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
You know, okay, so the real thing is that I make these TikToks, but I actually don't have that strong of opinions. If you like T-Rex, you can like T-Rex. So go ahead and do that. But
that's such a good answer. Oh, there's a but. Perfect.
But.
There are so many cool dinosaurs that exist out there. So that is why I'm kind of like, do you really like T-Rex, or is it the only one that you know?
See, that's the thing. That's the thing.
So if you like T-Rex and you know about other dinosaurs and you're still like, that's my favorite, I'm like, okay, fair enough. Enjoy it.
I like cool. that.
For me, I also have kind of a basic favorite dinosaur. So I can't even be judgmental.
You can't call anyone out, really.
I love Stegosaurus so much.
Aww.
Oh.
I think they're precious. And then I also, I really like Archaeopteryx. Archaeopteryx is one of those transition fossils,
yeah.
So.
The like.
Yeah, uh-huh.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Is that the one? I'm so glad. Is that the one, there's like a famous fossil with like its neck bent like back kind of a thing? Or I guess
there's a lot of those, actually, to go into that.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I think you might have done it. TikTok about this, about the like death pose of certain fossils. I could be wrong.
I think I've made a couple like that are like mm-hmm. just kind of making fun of how silly they look sometimes when they die. Like, really, really, Evelyn, you're going to make fun of someone for the way that they died? Really?
My goal, die silly. Or die trying.
Be found in a silly, goofy pose. That's
pretty much
the goal.
Uh-huh. Get fossilized.
Get fossilized.
Yeah, so they have this really interesting death pose that, like, their necks kind of, it's like, rigor mortis kind of sets in and just causes them to do that. And when you find a dinosaur that's been, like, articulated still and kind of beautiful like that, it's like a once in a million kind of find.
Wow.
Most of the time you find, like, little pieces of dinosaur fossils. Yeah. But those ones where it's just beautiful, the whole thing is there, like, those are just chef's kiss.
That's so, because to your point with rigor mortis, there's like a biological process and story happening there more than just like a single, that's
And
wild.
That's called taphonomy.
What?
There's a word for that.
Yeah.
Taphonomy, excuse me. It's the study of taffy.
Duh. Of course, Tom.
But I'm tss.
Oh, we edit those in post. Don't worry. Taphonomy is what?
Here,
is...
let me look up the official definition so I don't butcher the crap out of it.
Okay. So many great words.
There are some great words in this episode.
Okay, so taphonomy is the branch of paleontology that deals with the process of fossilization. So when there are little things about a fossil that kind of explain more about its life, those are really awesome things to find. There's a set of vertebra from a sauropod in Wyoming that I got to see that basically his back broke and all of these vertebra fused together. And that's called a pathology. So you can actually see that this animal was able to heal itself and that shows up in a fossil, which is pretty amazing.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty awesome.
That's so cool.
Funny thing is they think that might have happened during a mating ritual.
Oh, that's a bit unfortunate. Oh, dear.
Like, sorry, bestie.
Relatable. Who among us hasn't fused their vertebrae during a mating ritual?
Throw anyway. Your back out.
Wow. Can I ask, and so how often are you out there digging up and seeing fossils, I guess, is a silly question that I just.
Yeah, so I wish it was more of my time was spent outside, but a lot of my time is spent in the lab. But anytime I do get to go outside, I'm like, yes, this is awesome. I spend, as much time as possible digging up fossils. And I have a group that I go out with in Wyoming. So we go dig White River stuff. And we're also currently working in Mesa Verde, which is Cretaceous rock. So we're finding dinosaurs out there. It's really exciting because most of that is undescribed. So most of the stuff that we know about is the Hell Creek Formation. When we're talking about like really famous guys like T-Rex and Triceratops and stuff, that comes from that formation, which is also really cool. Like that was 66 million years ago, like right before the asteroid hits. But it's fun getting to learn about other things too that were going on. To answer your question, I wish I spent more time outside.
That's so cool.
Do you know off the top of your head how many... first off, have you found dinosaurs? And how many of them have you found? Do you know the number?
I haven't found very many, but I have worked on a couple of them.
Okay.
My friend found this really adorable one. I can't talk about it because it's still under wraps. But it...
Ooh, exciting.
My friend found one. We got to work on it, and it's like super exciting. I can't wait for the publication to come out, but I can't talk about it.
That's so cool. Yeah.
You'll have to let us know when the publication is so that we can share it around. Yeah.
We'll give a shout, 100%.
Uh-huh. And then the really exciting thing, I think I can talk about this, if they try to come at me, whatever. But I found a really cool crocodile that was like right next to one of the dinosaurs. So I was really excited
about
that.
That's so cool.
Like an ancient.
Yeah. Ancient croc.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Old boy.
So I have done a little bit of a peruse through your TikTok. And one of your most recent TikToks is talking about how holding a dinosaur poop fossil sparked your interest in geology specifically. And I just want to know a bit more about that story and how that set you off on the trajectory that you are on now.
Yeah, so fossilized poo, they're called coprolites. So again, I really love finding any kind of fossil. It's super exciting. But when you find a trace fossil like coprolite or a poop, you can find out a lot about an animal from their feces. So you can kind of tell what's going on in their diet. Some coprolites out there, people have found like bones and stuff, so they can tell what the critter was eating before.
So much like with owl pellets, we have like dinosaur pellets that tell us about other dinosaurs.
Dino poos. Solid.
Yeah.
Poos. Yeah. Awesome. 10 out of 10. But the way that it happened was I went to like this, I was like a kid, I was probably like 10 or something, and I had like this rock collection. So my parents were like, okay, you can go to this rock show that they're doing. And I talked to this old geologist dude, and he was like...
I also just gotta say, I love that it was a rock show, not a rock show.
No, it was like a rock show.
Mom, can I go to this rock show? Sorry.
No! The guitars are evil! But yeah, so I met this geologist guy who just like really sparked my love of rocks and minerals and all of this, and he was talking to me and showing off his collection, and he like handed me this rock and he was like, can you guess what this is? And I was holding it and I was like, no idea. And he was like, that's dinosaur poo. And I was just like, you just handed me dinosaur poo? Like, this is awesome. So that sparked like a, I like this, this is really neat. Mm-hmm. How cool.
My next question is like, obviously, fossils tend to form from like solid things rather than tissues and soft stuff. How does a poop become fossilized?
It's the same process. It's just minerals getting exchanged for other minerals. So I wasn't actually holding dinosaur poo. I was holding minerals that exchanged in the dinosaur poo. But still.
It's sort of like a ship of Theseus question, right?
Exactly,
where it's like, if
yeah.
all of the things get replaced by other things, is it the same thing?
Exactly.
I like to think it's poop because I like to imagine a dinosaur millions of years ago taking a poop and just thinking, this is going to inspire the shit out of someone. Just you wait.
Oh, man, I love that. This is my greatest work. He's like, oh, that was God. Such a good one. I hope someone finds that.
Preserve that one.
Preserve that.
This
fossilize
is the keeper. Fossilize it.
Oh man, it's already devolved.
I could do better. I can do better. We'll do another one. We'll do another take.
But this also leads me on to talking about TikTok. I feel like all of the guests we have on here, we have to have a small little rant about TikTok as a platform. But how did you get into posting on TikTok? Because that's how I was aware of your existence. Tell us a bit about that.
During the pandemic, we had to work from home. And I downloaded this silly app called TikTok, and I was just like really obsessed with it. I thought it was really funny. And then I was like, no one's making paleontology content, so maybe I could do that. And so I started making like silly things that kind of went to do with like trends and stuff. And so I started posting those. And then I had this one just like blow up, and it was just talking about how Spinosaurus has changed over the years. And then from that, I got like 80,000 followers from just like a video. So I don't know. It doesn't seem real to me.
Yeah.
Correct.
Those are not real people. And
that's such a mood. Yeah.
Can I tell you, we had Steve Rathjay on, and he has like a million followers, and it was very funny because he also was like, none of that feels real. And it's a shame because we were all hoping that he would say like, yeah, when you hit a million, you suddenly get fulfilled, and then you get and then that's all it takes.
And then
everything's fine. But no, it's such a strange. I mean, it's wonderful and it's delightful. It's also great to see other creators like you on there, and I'm sure there are folks who learn a great deal and get inspired by some of the stuff you do. It's really great.
Thank you. I love your guys' content. I think you guys make awesome stuff.
Ah, thank you. That's all I was waiting for.
Yeah, give us validation. I remember specifically
when you followed me, I was like,
oh no,
I'm famous. Just kidding. But I was like totally mind blown because I was just like, I did not think, like, I still don't think that they're real. Like, it's anyone who interacts with my content, like, what are you doing?
I've told you this, Evelyn. I don't know if I've told Caroline that I was like making a new friend and I was talking about them about TikTok stuff and I was like, yeah, well, do you know like Hank and John Green? And they were like, not really. And I was like, I was like trying to find like a thing to impress them, and I was like, I'm friends with like a paleontologist, and they were like, and they're like, oh, so you're big on TikTok.
That was the thing.
And
that's hilarious.
So and I'm, it's so cool. And also, it you clearly had a clear background from working at the museum in sort of this kind of science communication. Do you find that there's any difference, or does one make you better at the other when it comes to sort of at working at the museum versus like working on TikTok?
The only thing is that I really can complain about on TikTok is when you're trying to do any kind of science communication, science has a lot of words like if, maybe, probably.
Yeah.
And because if you say absolutely, you're kind of a psychopath because you can always get like someone can find something that proves you wrong. So you use that type of verbiage to like cover your ass. But for some reason on TikTok, a lot of people think that if you use that type of language that you're not doubling down enough, you don't believe in like what you're saying. And
that's a great point. Yeah. That's such a great point.
Yeah. And then the thing that does suck is that it has to be so fast and it has to be so concise. Yep. You can't like a whole paragraph no one's going to read. So you have to have it's like a complex thing written in something so tiny. Like, I don't think I could ever really do a TikTok of like what makes something a dinosaur in a way that could be consumable.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So there's another creator that I love called Marine Bioho, and all of her content it's so short, and a part of me is like, God, I would love like another 5-minute explanation of this, but we're never going to be able to consume that on TikTok because it just wouldn't do very well. Or like I posted my first TikTok for like 4 months the other day, and I recorded it all, and it was maybe like 2.5 minutes long, and it was like, and I like slept on it before posting it and was just like, it's too long. I'm gonna have to like at least half this thing, if not like cut it down to a third of the length of time, otherwise it's just going to completely flop. I get that, like. And I think that's the joy of doing the podcast, is at least it gives us a bit of a space to fully flesh out the things that are going on in our brains.
I feel that. As a consumer, I use YouTube to just like watch 50-minute things and like listen to like really long content things. But I took a media literacy course in college where we talked about like the way that people, especially like the younger generation, tend to consume content, and a lot of it has to be so quick and so fast. And if you notice like how newspapers write things, it's in this inverted pyramid style. So like the most important thing has to be at the very top because no one is going to read till the end of an article. And I remember like learning about that in college and being like really mind blown because I do read full articles, and when it's like just a one paragraph thing, I get pissed off. Like, I'm like, this writer sucks.
Well, and this is so interesting. But I think one thing I always think about when it comes to news articles that I miss is that sort of chronological story leading up to a thing, like what you were saying with the age of the earth, like getting to experience the long story from the start, like to think about that, then go to the middle, then get to the answer, as opposed to just like getting there right away. that's which is not an inverted pyramid, it's a sort of like slope up to get there.
I also think
that's one of the best ways to learn stuff, is to realize not just the newest thing that was learned, but also like how that came to be.
Yeah. I think it's also better for your brain to kind of follow a style like that, because as you're thinking critically about something, you're like, oh, that, and then maybe this, yeah. and then you finally get to it, and you're like, yes!
Yeah.
Instead of being like, here's the answer. Mm-hmm. But TikTok is like, you have to go like, here's the answer, or else TikTok like punishes that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Here's the thing immediately to draw you in, and then maybe if the creator is lucky, the person will stick around for the minute-long explanation of the statement that was made.
Yep.
We'll see.
Yep.
Can I ask, do you have any... I hate to spring this on you, and you can take some time to answer if you have. Do you have any creators that you think are doing a great job on TikTok?
I love Astro Alexandra. She is
She's great.
So great. I don't know her last name, but Ariel, she's a... science communicator. She does science, space stuff. Shoot, there's so many people that I just love. She works at an observatory in Arizona, and I just think she's so cool. But yeah, there's a lot of other awesome people. Joanna Soros, she does other paleontology content. My friend Miria, I love her. She makes really funny dino stuff. And then there's my other friend Holly. So many. I could just vomit people that I love.
That's great. We'll be sure to link everyone you mentioned in the show notes.
There's so many good science creators on TikTok, and I feel like it's such a shame that often the algorithm doesn't really push people in that direction very often. I know even on my For You page, it's very little science content and a lot of other stuff, no matter how hard I try to curate it into the sciencey direction. But yes, I think it's nice to shout some people out and go and follow those people if you're listening. Yeah, as well as you, of course. I think that's it on the questions.
Let me double check.
You did it. You did so good.
I had one last question.
Oh, okay.
I'm so sorry. And I don't know if you have an opinion on this. How do you feel about movies like Jurassic Park?
Oh.
Do you have any opinions on those?
Yeah, I have opinions. I know a lot of paleontologists who hate Jurassic Park, and I know a lot of paleontologists who love Jurassic Park. And I think my opinion is kind of skewed because I didn't get to see Jurassic Park until I was like a full-blown adult. And so I liked it for what it was. I think an interesting, really cool film, getting to see like dinosaurs doing things. And especially for the time, it inspired like a whole wave of paleontologists to become paleontologists. So I think that is awesome. And they were working with what they could at the time. They had... Jack Horner and other paleontologists who they collaborated with to try to create as accurate of dinosaurs as they could. There were some things that they just went crazy on, but whatever. Hollywood is Hollywood. So I think they did a pretty good job with like the first original ones, but I haven't even bothered to watch the most recent ones.
Ooh.
They are trash.
I'm so sorry. I can't believe we almost forgot. I don't know if we'll include this. We'll see. If not, but earlier, before we started recording, Evelyn mentioned that she's done a few other earlier creative works, including a previous podcast for a class and also a possible Minecraft YouTube channel.
I did. I was the Minecraft YouTuber before they were a thing, so.
Ooh. You're the hipster of Minecraft YouTube channels. Oh,
come
no.
Come at me, Dream.
Come at me, Dream. I was going to say.
But do you think doing those things has, like, either influenced your career choices or influenced your attitude towards TikTok? Or made you want to make TikToks when the opportunity sort of arose?
Yeah, yeah. So I have been chronically online for my entire life. So when I first got like access to YouTube, I just went crazy. I started learning as much as I could. When Crash Course came out, I flipped the freak out. Like I watched so much Crash Course. I love stuff like that. Any kind of learning or educational thing, like I will watch it. And I also started watching a lot of like podcasts that YouTubers at the time had been putting out. And a lot of like the story that they talk about is like, we just kind of were the first people to do it. And we just happened to be at the right time. And that kind of reminded me when I like first was using TikTok, like if you just might be like the first person to do something, that can also like jumpstart.
Yeah.
So that was one of my reasoning for making TikToks about dinosaurs and stuff. So it definitely did influence that. And then science communication is super important, especially because like there are so many states with bad science laws and rules about how science can be taught. Specifically talking about U.S. because that's what I know for education-wise. And I come from a red state where talking about any kind of controversial take, like the age of the Earth, couldn't happen. So, like, geology classes were really watered down. They didn't get to go into a lot of stuff like that. So I think the internet is really amazing because students that are from places where they're not getting, like, an actual quality education can go out and find things themselves. So I think that's really important. I think Crash Course is, like, an amazing thing. I'm so happy that they did that. Because it's such a great tool.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like so much of science is generally very inaccessible to people without a scientific background. And therefore, getting to, like, learning stuff from your TikTok, it feels so much more accessible than trying to, like, actually try and do the research myself. That sounds terribly lazy, but I stand by that statement, you know?
No, and I, look, here's the thing. You can't, most of the time, you can't expect, like, a random person to go out and read a research paper because they're not going to understand any of that. So having people, like, especially, like, you guys who will go out and, like, read those papers and digest it enough to, like, be able to say it in layman's terms to someone is, like, a really important thing to happen because you got to branch the two because I think a lot of the time, not to shade scientists, but they're not great sometimes at explaining really difficult things for concepts that are, you know, easy to digest.
And I mean, that's fair because they're spending all of their time doing, like, in the trenches, doing the staring at the numbers, doing the work. And so, there's a work to science communication.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm currently writing a script for a future episode and it's on a topic that I know quite well and I'm still reading what scientists are writing, I'm just being endlessly frustrated at them. And I'm like, why did you have to use that term? Why couldn't you just say layered instead of something else? And it's like, we don't do ourselves like a service almost in making it super inaccessible. Some of us are just so pretentious. I said it, we do this to people. So I think being able to, in the way that people on TikTok do, being able to put it in this short form accessible format is really refreshing. At the same time, it's really nice to see people like processing that information in that way and just being like, this is what that means and I'm just gonna say it in a really simple way. So I think your TikTok do that really well.
Oh thank you.
It fun as well. It's
so
nice
much
mix,
shit posting,
I think.
I think the most important question, the most meaningful question that I'm sure we're all asking is, were you doing like creative server stuff, survival mode? Were you like building stuff?
We were actually finding maps that people had made that were like ones that you have to go through and try to like escape from jail or something.
Yeah.
So, I really would be surprised if you could ever find it. It's pretty deep on the internet.
So folks, that somewhere will be in the show notes. You can go and check it out. Me and Tom, we're determined to find it now.
All right, if you do, oh my god,
we'll let you know.
There's like an infinite sea of Minecraft videos. Boy,
we've got a few days to do this, Tom. Together we can do it.
All right,
I'm pretty confident.
That we'll find it?
No, that you will never find it.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, if we're lucky enough, we just like say it out loud a few more times and then the YouTube algorithm will recommend it to us out of nowhere.
Jesus.
We have been talking about playing Minecraft sometime.
Yeah.
So we'll let you know if we do that.
We should definitely do that at some point, and we'll invite you along. That'd be really fun.
Hell yeah!
Yeah,
I'm down.
Nice.
Yes. Cool. Oh my god, can we please play Minecraft together? Like, I'm so ready.
I don't know. The thing is, I don't know if we're gonna make it content or not. That's the question.
That's the thing. Do we record our entire interaction?
Look, you're talking to a professional Minecraft YouTuber. I think we can do this.
Oh my god.
I made these pins that I want to send to you guys.
What?
Yeah. Okay, I have...
Oh, my... What?
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 Yeah. I designed pins. So there's a Helicoprion pin, and then Spino, an Allosaurus.
What? Oh, my God. So do you have
T-Rex
a shop
that,
where
that you designed?
Sell these?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Shout it out. We... Do
yeah,
it.
We were just about to ask if you had any plugs or shoutouts.
Yeah. I forgot. I was just going to send these to you.
Oh, my God. You really don't have
to. You can find
to.
Them on Fossil Horde. And they're just on there as paleo pins,
they
so if you want some.
So
but I wanted
cool.
to send you guys some because I have a ton of them sitting around.
If you do, we will
and I think,
shout
I thought you would
out.
Like them.
Oh, they're so cool. Are you kidding? Yeah.
Thanks.
Evelyn, what are your socials one more time so everyone can give you a follow?
Yeah, so you can find me on TikTok at Evelyn_Vollmer, and then you can find me on Instagram at the same handle. And then I also make these fun little pins that you can find on Fossil Horde. But yeah, that's what I got.
Do you have like a link to anything that we can link in the show notes?
I do. I could send that to you.
Perfect. Thank you.
Cool.
Good stuff. Awesome.
Check out those show notes. I'm Tom Lum Person everywhere.
And I'm Caroline the Bug everywhere. We should probably shout out Ella.
And Ella is Dr. Big Science Energy on TikTok. So today we learned that the Earth is not infinity years old. It is in fact 4.6 billion years old. We learned what makes a dinosaur, what isn't a dinosaur. We learned taphonomy. We learned about coprolites. We learned about being chronically online and science communication. And you can join us all next time where we will learn about
everything!
Let's Learn Everything is independently produced and hosted by Ella Hubber, Tom Lum, and Caroline Roper. Editing and music by the wonderful and talented Tom Lum.
Yeah, every time I think of an idea that I could do on a YouTube video, I'm like, oh, I could just do it on the podcast, though.
No, you can't do it on a podcast, though. Minecraft Let's Play makes you think. Makes you think. Watch out, Dream.
Oh, don't do this.
We go, oh my God, we're science Minecraft YouTubers.
Yeah, that's our gimmick. This formation of dirt isn't accurate. Science Minecraft.
Science. What the hell is a bedrock?
Science. The way these chickens mate isn't scientifically accurate. Science.
Today we're going to learn about the cloaca.
I just realized because Ella's not here, this episode is the first American episode of Let's Learn Everything. We
no,
did it!
No.
Raise the flag!
USA!
I'm proud
USA!
To be an American!
American! Well, at least I know I'm free.
Oh, I feel overpowered right now. Oh no! Your patriotism
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States.
Red, white, and blue, these colors don't bleed.
I love paying for healthcare. Oh, God.